Blog Talk Radio.
Shabbat Shalom, or Shalom Shalom. It's not actually Shabbat today. Used to my old program, and as we also know, the Gregorian calendar does not coincide with the Father's calendar, so Shabbat is the seventh day, which is not necessarily Saturday. So welcome to Everlasting Covenant Free from Paul. We are a fellowship that now hosts this program on Sundays, 9 a.m. Pacific, 10 Mountain, 11 Central, noon Eastern. We are here for 1.5 hours. The phone number to call in is area code 319-527-6208 to listen and join the discussion. Again, that number is area code 319-527-6208. Pressing 1 will get you in the queue to speak. You can also listen to us on freedomizerradio.live. I am your host today. Brandy and Chris are planning to join us. I know I got some messages from other potential listeners confirming the time of the show, so we definitely look forward to potentially having some additional guests today. Brandy is the author of The Set Apart Place, very interesting book that discusses the potential dialogue that may have occurred in the garden from the perspective of those that were there. We invite you here weekly to join our Old Path group of followers of Yahuwah, the Father in Heaven. We study the everlasting covenant established by the Father in Heaven. We do believe and know that truth is absolute, and we are pursuing that absolute truth and willing to depart from traditions that we were taught growing up and walking in the one and only way of the Father via coming out of Babylon, recognizing the leaven in our own thought and belief, and returning to that old path that the Father established and made everlasting. So our focus is in discovering the truth of the way of the Father, Yahuwah. We don't refer to him as God due to the fact that God came from Gad, which is a pagan deity, and we understand that it is synonymous for most of the Father in Heaven, and if that is where you are, then we understand that. We don't expect somebody to move out of a way that has not yet been shown to them, but we congratulate you for studying that and being willing to listen. So we do study the old path referred to in Jeremiah 6:16. This is what the Father says, stand at the crossroads and look. Ask for the ancient paths. Where is the good way? Then walk in it, and you will find rest for your souls. We believe that the Father did not stutter there, and he expressed something very dear to his heart, and therefore believe that the words that the people responded with, we will not walk in it, were a crushing blow, and we do not want to be those that are not walking in the way of the Father, and want to be those that heed to the warnings to beware of wolves in sheep's clothing, and to beware of the leaven of the Pharisee and that of Herod. And having addressed that, we also have our eyes wide open that Paul came from the tribe of Benjamin that was prophesied in Genesis 49:23 to have brought that leaven, to have divided the spoil being the riches that the father brought, and divided them such that they were no longer the same jewels that the father presented, but had been distorted and fed to the Gentiles, which they did not recognize because they were not grounded in the ways of the Father, and therefore, just as prophesied, a new religion overtook through an excuse called dispensationalism, and we're here to recognize that, come out of Babylon, and stand firmly in the truth. So we also study free of the opposing gospel according to Paul, free of religious corruption, and also free of the influence of the Roman Catholic Church. So join us weekly on Sundays at noon to 1:30 Eastern. Just subtract an hour for Central, 2 hours for Mountain, 3 hours for Pacific, and you will find your time. So again, we welcome all of you here to our broadcast. And I'm going to momentarily check the communication. I've got one of my potential guests messaging me. Let me share the phone number with him. And he put that, let's see, he says he wants to know if anything's going on live. We just started. So, I know that Chris and Brandy and I got a chance to visit this week, and they are planning on hopping on the program as well. So I look forward to Brandy's delightful voice and Chris's wisdom, and vice versa. So last week we talked about, must we apply the Bible's test for a true prophet to Paul? We talked about that extensively. So this week, I want to dig in with Paul could still be a Balaam who initially has true prophecy. We touched on that last week, so we remember that story from the Old Testament. To be a true prophet, Paul must prove also not to offer teachings that negate what came before. That's found in Deuteronomy 4:2 and 13:1-5, which we also read last week. Yahusha, completely consistent with what came before, he upheld every jot and letter of the law and insisted upon an ongoing necessity to teach and follow the law, Matthew 5:18. Consequently, the Messiah's words qualify as prophetic. For example, predictive and confirmed, valid, consistent, and never negating what preceded, and in the name of I am, because the Messiah claimed to be I am, John 8:58. By contrast, Paul's predictive statement is certainly not invoking Yahuwah's name. And give me just 1 minute here. So by contrast, Paul's predictive statement is certainly not invoking Yahuwah's name. Instead, Paul relied upon an angel alone. And I apologize for the momentary silence. My potential listeners said he was on, but he's not showing to be on, so I had to give some quick instructions to help him get over. Hopefully he will find his way over here very shortly. So even if Paul had a prophecy in Yahuwah's name, there is a substantial question whether Paul's words were also valid, consistent with and not negating what preceded. Paul must be examined to determine if he started true turned false and apostatized later. The example from history that proves this is correct, is a correct test of Paul. And just so that, the example from history that proves this is a correct test of Paul is the story of Balaam. And I also have done this test on Paul, and I don't believe that he was ever true. It's my personal belief from my own investigation, but this is an interesting pathway to walk down. So despite Baal prophesying with the Holy Spirit, Numbers 24, 1 through 2, and believing in the coming Messiah to rule the world, Numbers 24, 17, Balaam later apostatized and was lost. Balaam's star prophecy of Messiah. Most Christian commentators acknowledge the false prophet Balaam did originally give true messianic prophecy and the star prophecy. This is why Matthew identifies the Magi following the star to Bethlehem, Matthew 2:1. Let's see how amazing is Balaam's prophecy of Numbers 24:17 to realize how Balaam was a true prophet of Christ at one time, but who later turned false in Numbers 24:17. We read Balaam's words. Okay, just a moment. So if you're listening live and you don't want to be a guest on the show, that's perfectly fine. You can do that at freedomizerradio.live. But if you want to join the conversation, you will have to call the phone number, which is area code 319-527-6208. That's 319-527-6208. And you just need to press 1 to let me know that you want to be in the queue. So in Numbers 24:17, we read Balaam's words, "I see him, but not now. I behold him, but not nigh. There shall step forth a star out of Jacob, and a scepter shall rise out of Israel, and shall smite through the corners of Moab, and break down all the sons of tumult." Friedman, in the modern Jewish translation, renders the first key part, "A star has stepped from Jacob." Commentary on the Torah. The scepter implied the star would identify a new king. The last part, on someone ruling the sons of tumult, was interpreted by ancient Jews as meaning rule the world. The Targum of Onkelos from circa 150 A.D. The aromatic interpretation of the law restates this passage to have a messianic application. A king shall arise from the house of Jacob and be anointed the Messiah out of Israel. Clearly, Numbers 24:17 was deemed a messianic prophecy by Jews long before the Messiah appeared. Balaam was not saved despite believing in Messiah to come. The fact Balaam uttered a messianic prophecy has important meaning in salvation doctrine. It answers the question whether believing in a messianic prophecy and knowing about Christ, as did Balaam, saves you. Balaam's destruction at Moses' request proved such a belief alone did not save Balaam. Yet, indisputably, Balaam was one of the first under inspiration of the Holy Spirit to believe in the prophecy specifically about the Messiah. He saw the Messiah and believed in him, yet Balaam later apostatized by teaching Jews that they could eat meat sacrificed to idols and that they could fornicate. That's found in Numbers 31:8. And 16, and also in Revelation 2:14. So let's just go over and look that up and read that really quickly. And I'm just now opening up my eSword this morning, and it's going to take me 2 seconds for it to come up. This first time, then it will be much quicker for future. Bible verses that we refer to, but I think the program is much richer when we stop and actually refer and give credibility to references. Otherwise, I could just be stating things out of my own mouth. So let's confirm it. Numbers 31:8. And they slew the kings of Midian, beside the rest of them that were slain, Evi, and Rechem, and Zur, and Hur, and Reba, five kings of Midian. Balaam also, the son of Beor, they slew with the sword. And then verse 16. So this is Numbers 31:16. Behold, these caused the children of Israel through the counsel of Balaam to commit trespass against the Father in heaven in the matter of Peor. And there was a plague among the congregation of the Father in heaven of Yahuwah. It says Lord here. I'm using replaced names because Lord, again, is a pagan word. So out of respect for the leaven that has been revealed to me, I'm coming out of the place I was in where I used to use that word, just for clarification. So this is very interesting, because when this truth is applied over today, over today's situation, we can see that it is, notwithstanding, that it is entirely possible and even true that it is not only the world that is turned from the Father, but the church itself has leaven, serves Baal, and has turned away from the everlasting covenant and the source of it, the Father in heaven. So this is why we get together and research this on a weekly basis, because there is nothing more important on this earth, and very few people are talking about it. I am encouraged that I do see more and more people actually discussing what they're learning in regard to the great apostasy actually being in the church. So that's actually very encouraging. And let me get this other window. That's what's nice about my guest showing up on time, that I can quickly also serve as the administrator of all of the other things that have to go on to make sure things run smoothly in the moments where somebody else is talking. But I apologize. I'm not sure where Chris and Brandy are today. A lot of times they're traveling and don't have service, and maybe they don't have service to even let me know, because I know they usually will message me and let me know if something is up. See if I have any messages from them. Okay. All right, so carrying on with the type and shadow of Balaam in the Old Testament. So indisputably, Balaam was one of the first under inspiration of the Holy Spirit to believe in the prophecy about the Messiah. And we know that he actually believed and then turned and became a source of deception for the congregation that did not do their own research, but relied on him as a source of credibility, just like today's believers rely on the canon is a source of credibility, not tracing that back to, that comes from the Catholic Church who apostatized. And many people will recognize that the Catholic Church has apostatized and yet cling tightly to the canon, as every word in it declared canon is inspired, according to most Christians. So why do Paulinists ignore Balaam's prophecy? Why would Paulinists not want to focus upon this amazing messianic prophecy in Numbers 24:17? Let's look at that really quickly. Numbers 24:17. I shall see him, but not now. I shall behold him, but not nigh. Okay, that's the one we read earlier. Just wanted to make sure. You rarely hear any discussion of it in Paulinist-oriented congregations. It actually is necessary to know about the story to make sense of why the Magi arrived at Bethlehem and why they were following a star. There is no excuse to not help people understand the Star of Bethlehem and its key role in the Nativity. This prophecy is ignored for three reasons. First, it shows how one of the most amazing inspired prophecies of Messiah came from a man who later apostatized and is certainly lost. Such a possibility is denied by eternal security advocates, relying principally on Paul for their teaching. Thus, any mention of Balaam's prophecy causes embarrassment to proponents of eternal security. Second, the background on the star prophecy shows that people steeped in error and pagan practices, like the Magi, could still hold on to true messianic prophecy of the Bible. Yet believing in messianic prophecy did not make them saved Christians. It likewise does not make someone a Christian who thinks they can believe the intellectual side of a prophecy with no change in the heart. The Magi's doctrines taught them they were saved if they used the right verbal formula for belief known as a mantra. They also believed they could pray to those in the afterlife. Lucian Menippos 6:9, their teachings about mantras thereby violated the law given to Moses, which preached salvation by repentance from sin, atonement, and faithfulness. Moreover, the Magi's teachings about talking to the dead also violated the law given to Moses. And that's found in Deuteronomy 18:11, Isaiah 8 and 19 and 19:3. So let's look at that. Deuteronomy 18:11. Or a charmer or a counselor with familiar spirits. So let me back up so that there's context. So abominable practices, Deuteronomy 18:9. When thou art come into the land which the Father in heaven giveth thee, thou shalt not learn to do after the abominations of those nations. There shall not be found among you anyone that maketh his son or his daughter to pass through the fire, that useth divination, or an observer of times, or an enchanter, or a witch, or a charmer, or a consulter with familiar spirits, or a wizard, or a necromancer. For all that do these things are an abomination unto the Father in heaven, and because of these abominations, the Father in heaven doth drive them out from before the sea, from before thee. Isaiah 8:19. And when they shall say unto you, seek unto them that have familiar spirits, and unto wizards that peep and that mutter, should not a people seek unto their Father in heaven for the living to the dead, to the law and to the testimony? If they speak not according to this word, it is because there is how much light in them? It is because there is no light in them. And a lot of people will argue Paul kept the law, and they can cite verses. Paul kept the law, and he cites examples where he states it's important, but the same words come out of his mouth that contradict those words. And that's what we call a forked tongue or a serpent tongue, where you speak out of both sides of your mouth so that you can please any crowd that you're listening to. And there is an actual seduction to that type of speech, where the person that isn't avidly seeking truth but wants to attach itself, their mind wants to attach itself to that which they hope is true or they want to be true, will only hear that which they want to hear and adopt that message as credibility for what they want to hear, rather than recognizing that there is no credibility in a forked tongue. And so this is very, very important. See, I had a couple of other verses, I think, that I was going to read, and sometimes I get lost in reading, and then I lose my place, so give me just a second. Isaiah 8:19, did we read that? Isaiah 8:19, let me look. Don't think we did. Oh, wait, we did just read that. Okay, and then 19:3 is the next one. And the spirit of Egypt shall fail in the midst thereof, and I will destroy the counsel thereof, and they shall seek to the idols, and to the charmers, and to them that have familiar spirits, and to the wizards. And the Egyptians will I give over into the hand of a cruel lord, and a fierce king shall rule over them, saith the Father in heaven, the Elohim of hosts, and the waters shall fail from the sea, and the river shall be wasted and dried up, and they shall turn the rivers far away, and the brooks of defense shall be emptied and dried up. The reeds and the flags shall wither. Thus, for those steeped in eternal security, it is difficult to mention the Magi were unsaved people who believed in messianic prophecies. Lastly, the Magi from Babylon in Matthew 2:1 make us uncomfortable for another reason. Their presence proves how the Messiah wanted us to understand the symbolism of Babylon in the book of Revelation. The Magi of Babylon came from a culture steeped in a certain type of doctrinal error. They must have correctly worshipped the Father in heaven of Daniel. First, Nebuchadnezzar acknowledged Yahuwah. Lastly, King Darius also later specifically decreed that the God of Daniel was the true Yahuwah and that his entire vast empire had to acknowledge this. Daniel 4:34 through 37 and 6:22. So Daniel 4:34 through 37, Daniel 4:34, and at the end of the days, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted up mine eyes unto heaven, and mine understanding returned unto me, and I blessed the Most High, and I praised and honored him that liveth forever, whose dominion is an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom is from generation to generation, and all the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing. And he doeth according to his will in the army of heaven and among the inhabitants of the earth. And none can stay his hand or say unto him, what doest thou? At the same time my reason returned unto me, and for the glory of my kingdom mine honor and brightness returned unto me, and my counselors and my Lord sought unto me, and I was established in my kingdom, and excellent majesty was added unto me. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the King of heaven. All his works are truth, and his ways judgment. And those that walk in pride, he is able to abase. So let's go to 6:26. I make a decree that in every dominion of my kingdom men tremble and fear before the Father of Daniel, for he is the living Father in heaven and steadfast forever, and his kingdom which shall not be destroyed, and his dominion shall be even unto the end. He delivereth and rescueth, and he worketh signs and wonders in heaven and in earth, who hath delivered Daniel from the power of the lions. So this Daniel prospered in the reign of Darius and in the reign of Cyrus the Persian. Thereafter, Daniel obviously had ample opportunity as the chief officer over the Magi. To inculcate faith in the true Yahuwah among the Magi. Daniel 6, 1 through 2. Based on Matthew 2, 1's mention of the Magos, Greek for Magi, there is every reason to believe this Jewish component of Babylonian religion continued. Babylonian religion must have absorbed this as part of Zoroastrianism, a monotheistic religion. In it, Daniel's God must have continued to be their one true Father in heaven for some significant period. So what does Babylon represent? A pagan religion? No, Babylon represents a faith with the right emphasis on the true Father in heaven and true Messiah, but adulteration by adding salvation and legal principles at its odds. We're going to pause right there and just play a few Freedomizer commercials, and we will be right back.
Barefaces Legal Radio, Saturdays, noon to 1:30 Eastern Time, Pacific Time, 9 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. Learn about your bareface rights and help keep us without face diapers. Looking for something different? Looking for something fun? Join Dan every Monday on the Freedomizer Network, 9 to 10:30 Pacific, noon to 1:30 Eastern, for Common Sense with the Educated Redneck, Dan Ellison, the show about everything and nothing at all.
The Korean films are my letter of recommendation. It is obvious their hearts are a letter of approval from Messiah. Dionysus from the 405 BC play the baker and Jesus of Nazareth quote the same line, kicking against the pricks. That is plausible, is it not? Am I not an apostle?
Let's study this and more proof that a test of whom we love exists in the New Testament canon. Join Everlasting Covenant Study Free from Paul, which airs Saturdays.
I had to cut that short because our time has changed and I need to get a new ad out. Of course, we're here Sundays now, noon to 1:30 Eastern. Okay. Okay, so let's pick back up. Based on Matthew 2, 1's mention of the Magos, Greek for Magi, there is every reason to believe this Jewish component of Babylonian religion continued. Babylonian religion must have absorbed this as part of Zoroastrianism, a monotheistic religion. And then we covered the rest of that. So how do we know the Magi had the right emphasis on the true Messiah? That they were waiting for Messiah's birth? Because Babylon's spiritual and political leaders, the Magi, were clearly aware of Daniel's prophecy of Messiah's date for being cut off. Daniel 9:25 through 26. Daniel was the chief of the Magi by appointment of the king. Thus, Daniel's prophecy would be well known by the Magi. This prophecy, uttered in 604 BC, said the Messiah shall come and be cut off after 69 periods of seven. That's 483 years from the order to restore and to build Jerusalem. That's found in Daniel 9, verses 25 and 26. So let's look that up really quickly. And my guest, my new guest appears to be listening to an old show and not realizing it. So I did send him a message, so maybe he'll figure it out and get over here quickly to our live broadcast. That would be wonderful. Okay, Daniel 9:26, and after 80 and 2 weeks shall Messiah be cut off, but not for himself, and the people of the prince that shall come shall destroy the city and the sanctuary. And the end thereof shall be with a flood, and unto the end of the war desolations are determined. And he shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week, and in the midst of the week he shall cause the sacrifice and the oblation to cease. And for the overspreading of abominations, he shall make it desolate, even until the consummation. Let me scroll down a bit. And that determined shall be poured upon the desolate. That's always been a very mysterious prophecy. So what year could the Magi deduce Messiah's being cut off? The year 33 AD. The Jewish calendar year is a lunar-based year, according to the author of the book, and I know people debate that. Chris and Brandy believe this, and I am investigating it. I feel like I need more understanding in that regard. So there are only 360 days in a year, according to the Father's calendar. I know the Gregorian says 365 and a half, or a fourth, unless you have leap year. And that's part of the changing of the times and why they have to mess with the calendar to make it work, because they messed with the original, the Fathers. So there are only 360 days in a year of which Daniel is prophesying. Daniel's prophecy of 483 lunar years thus represents 173,880 days. This equates to 476 solar years in our calendar. If you subtract 476 years from 444 BC, you hit square on 33 AD. How amazing. Thus, from Daniel's prophecy, the Magi would know the date of the Messiah's being cut off is 33 AD. The Magi then could piece together with the star prophecy of Balaam to determine his approximate time of birth. How did the Magi know the star prophecy? Again, the Magi, no doubt, were also trained by Daniel in the Messianic star prophecy from Numbers 24:16-19. Daniel mentions his continued use of the law of Moses while living in Babylon, Daniel 9:11-13. Daniel would then have shared this star prophecy in the law of Moses with his Magi. Why would the star prophecy tell the Magi that a star's rising would mark the birth of the Messiah? After all, the word birth is not mentioned in Numbers 24:16-19. For two reasons. First, a star rising, which for ancients included planetary conjunctions, was ordinarily claimed by the ancients to mark the birth of important future rulers. And I digress, but disagree with the planetary conjunctions being such that, given the fact we live on a geocentric plane underneath a dome and the stars are in the firmament. This is why the Romans understood the star prophecy in the first century AD to signal such a birth. For example, Suetonius tried claiming a star in that period augured the birth of one of their own emperors who would rule the world in fulfillment of the star prophecy from the east. Second, history proves the Magi understood the star prophecy as a birth augur. Christian historians have traced the prophecy of Balaam after 600 BC within the Babylonian religion. Abel-Pharagias, which I've never heard of before. I'm sure I have because I've read this book before, but I don't recall it. That's spelled Abulfaragius from 1226 to 1286 in his Historia Dynastarium, says that Zoroaster was a student of Daniel, and the Zoroaster taught the Magi that a new star would one day signal the birth of a mysterious child whom they were to adore. Thus the Magi would understand the star prophecy to be talking of the birth of the same person who is cut off in 33 AD in Daniel's prophecy. Therefore, the Magi of Babylon would be naturally looking backwards one adult lifetime, 40 years approximately, prior to 33 AD. This would identify the birth time for this Messiah to be approximately 7 BC. Thus, the Magi were on the lookout for the star precisely at about the time the Messiah was born, in about 3 BC. The Magi of Matthew 2:1 are thus following Balaam's star prophecy and Daniel's messianic prophecy to the letter. This is what squarely allows them to arrive at the right time in Bethlehem to give presents to the infant, Yahusha. Yet, throughout Revelation, Babylon is synonymous with harlot. What does this mean? Yahuwah is telling us that Babylon, led by the Magi rulers, was a nation whose faith is like that of Balaam. It knew the true Yahuwah and his Messiah, but it taught its people to violate the commands of the Father. It taught salvation by mere mantras, verbal formulas. Saved by grace through faith, ring a bell, anybody? Furthermore, it was a nation built on legal apostasy. In other words, Babylon had the correct faith in the true Yahuwah and waited for the true Messiah and even rejoiced at finding him. Otherwise, it had the wrong salvation principles, and all its behaviors were contrary to the Father's law. Babylon is thus depicted in Revelation as a harlot, prostituting itself to base desires. Consequently, the lessons of Balaam for us are many. We need to continue how important it is that we can alone say the right mantras of faith and be sincere and want to know Yahusha like the Magi did. But what happens if we trust in mantra like the Magi did? Confess with your mouth, believe in your heart. That Yahuwah, that God raised Christ from the dead, when in fact the Messiah says that the Father doth love him because the Messiah raised himself from the dead. So right there, it's evident that Paul is talking about a different entity than the one that walked in the book of Matthew when he refers to that which you put your trust in. Wake up. Pay attention. It's very important for your everlasting salvation. But what happens if we trust in a mantra like the Magi did to save us despite our rejection of the law which I am gave Moses? So the conclusion to this chapter, which is chapter 3 of Jesus Words Only by Douglas J. Del Tondo, Balaam was a true prophet who was later convicted as a false prophet under Deuteronomy 4:2 and 13:1-5. Balaam truly had the Holy Spirit when he blessed Israel and gave the star prophecy of Messiah. Moses expressly says so, yet Balaam is an apostate and lost. The Bible through Moses and the Son tell us this though, this too. Balaam's error was later telling Israel they could eat meat sacrificed to idols and they could commit fornication. That's in Revelation 2:14 that this is very in error. So this is confirmation that the one that comes to apostatize has this doctrine. And it's spoken against by the Messiah in Revelation. So this is after his death, burial, and revelation. For all the dispensationalists, it's proof right there. Dispensationalism is not accurate or to be followed. Revelation, I think I said 4:2. I meant 2:14. So let's find that. Revelation 2:14. In fact, let's just read Revelation chapter 2 up until 14. Revelation 2:1, unto the angel of the church of Ephesus write, these things saith he that holdeth the seven stars in his right hand, who walketh in the midst of the seven golden candlesticks. I know thy works and thy labor and thy patience and how thou canst not bear them which are evil, and thou hast tried them which say they are apostles and are not, and has found them liars. Okay, pause for just a minute. This verse right here coincides with Paul when he states in Timothy, one of the Timothys, I believe it's chapter 3, verse around 16, I think, but I'm not positive. I look this up from time to time, and then let's just go. It would be easy enough to find. 1 Timothy. Let's just go there real quick. 1 Timothy, I think it might even be, I think it's 2 Timothy, but let's look real quick. 2 Timothy, let's do, is it chapter 2? Let me do a search for the verse, because I know basically what the verse says. All have turned away from me. Let me put in the word Timothy, too, because they're bringing up all that kinds of... okay, 2 Timothy 1:15. So if you link Revelations 2 that I just read, 2:2, with 2 Timothy 1:15, you see that Paul admits he is this person. This thou knowest, that all they which are in Asia be turned away from me, of whom are Phygellus and Hermogenes. We know that Asia included Ephesus, which are the Ephesians. So the Messiah is speaking to the church at Ephesus in Revelation 2:1, and in Revelation 2:2, he congratulates them. I know thy works and thy labor and thy patience, and how thou canst not bear them which are evil, and thou hast tried them which say they are apostles and are not, and hast found them liars. That is just profound. I digress, but let's continue to read in Revelation. And hast borne and hast patience, and for my name's sake hast labored, and hast not fainted. Nevertheless, I have somewhat against thee, because thou hast left thy first love. Remember, therefore, from whence thou art fallen, and repent, and do the first works, or else I will come unto thee quickly, and will remove thy candlestick out of his place, except thou repent. Does it say the second works or the dispensationalized doctrine and gospel? No. Return to the beginning. Return to the first works. Return to the gospel that you knew from the start. Thou hast that thou hatest the deeds of the Nicolaitans, which I also hate. He that hath an ear, let him hear what the Spirit saith unto the churches. To him that overcometh, I will give to eat of the tree of life, which is in the midst of the paradise of Yahuwah. And unto the angel of the church of Smyrna write, these things saith the first and the last, which was dead and is alive. I know thy works, and the tribulation and poverty. But thou art rich, and I know the blasphemy of them which say they are Jews and are not, but are of the synagogue of Satan. Let's see, and we, let's see, Revelation 2:14, we're about to get to. And to the angel of the church in Pergamos write, these things saith he which hath the sharp sword with two edges. I know thy works, and where thou dwellest, even where Satan's seat is. And thou holdest fast my name, and hast not denied my faith, even in those days wherein Antipas was my faithful martyr, who was slain among you where Satan dwelleth. Now we're to Revelation 2:14. But I have a few things against thee, because thou hast there them that hold the doctrine of Balaam, who taught Balak to cast a stumbling block before the children of Israel, to eat things sacrificed unto idols and to commit fornication. Now, a Christian will tell you that if you hold to the Father's commandments, namely the Sabbath day and resting on it, that you are a stumbling block to another person's faith because you're doing works. And this is what really opened my eyes and sealed the deal up, that Paul was false. This was my big turning point. I was getting these vibrations that, I guess, communication inside of me, a knowing that was dawning on me but hadn't come to complete fruition. It's hard to describe and put words to, but what really opened my eyes was the fact that Christians were saying, it's okay if you keep the Sabbath as long as you're absolutely positive that you're saved. And you've said that sinner's prayer of Paul that he stated, that hocus pocus prayer of Paul formula, where you, in fact, confess that Messiah didn't have the power to raise himself, because it has you confess in it that God raised him from the dead, when the Messiah states that for this reason the Father doth love me, that I raised myself from the dead. In John 17, but don't tell anyone else about the Sabbath day, because if you do, you're a stumbling block to others' faith, because they must just have faith only, no works. You know, namely, they reestablish all of the Father's law, thou shalt not kill, steal, be jealous, etc. But the Sabbath is never reinstated. It's just interesting. But if you want to know what the stumbling block is from the eyes of the Father in heaven, Revelation 2:14 tells you very plainly, the stumbling block of Baal is to be taught that it's okay to eat things sacrificed unto idols, which I believe is any meat, because when you're sacrificing an animal, you're idealizing your own meal over the breath of life that you stole from the animal, or that you are eating that someone else stole from the animal. You're eating stolen goods. It's, you know, it may take some time to get there. You may never get there. When I saw it, I felt very convicted to not eat meat any longer. And, you know, Paul even criticizes that. So you're starting to see a pattern that Paul's doctrine is completely different. It's a different gospel. But the other part to this is to being a stumbling block is allowing fornication. So those are the greatest two addictions of mankind, by the way, are to eat meat and to fornicate. Believe it or not, the addiction to eat meat is stronger than that of drugs or alcohol. So Baal diminished the law. The story of Balaam is proof that we cannot just assume that if someone like Paul gave a true prophecy one time, that he has passed every test, or that he can never apostatize later. And I know a lot of people that see Paul think that that's what happened to him, and they could be correct. I don't agree that that's what happened to him, though, because I recognize the fact that Matthias was named as the replacement apostle for the one that fell, Judas. And that from the very beginning, Paul lied about his testimony of seeing the Messiah All three testimonies recorded in Acts are different, as we've mentioned many times on the broadcast. And the Messiah warns us, when they say to you that I am in the desert, believe it not. Believe it not is a command. We are commanded to not believe that he appeared in the desert on the road to Damascus. And yet most Christians, or all Christians by definition, embrace the idea that Paul's conversion occurred in the desert when he met the Messiah, and thus we have the gospel of grace that was taken to the Gentiles. It is shocking, I know. Believe me, I know. It is an incredibly shocking blow, if you can hear it. Most cannot. Chapter 4, Jesus' words only. Did the Messiah warn of false prophets who would negate the law? The Messiah was concerned about the signs and wonders, prophets misleading Christians. This is found in Matthew 7:15, verse 22, chapter 24, verse 11, and the entire chapter of 24. So, in keeping with our making sure that we maintain credibility in what we state, let's go read it. Matthew chapter 7, verses 15 through 23. Beware of false prophets which come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravening wolves. Ye shall know them by their fruits. Do men gather grapes of thorns or figs of thistles? Even so, every good tree bringeth forth good fruit, but a corrupt tree bringeth forth evil fruit. A good tree cannot bring forth evil fruit, neither can a corrupt tree bring forth good fruit. Every tree that bringeth not forth good fruit is hewn down and cast into the fire. Wherefore, by their fruits ye shall know them. Not everyone that saith unto me, Master, Master, shall enter the kingdom of heaven, but he that doeth the will of my Father which is in heaven. Many will say to me in that day, Master, Master, have we not prophesied in thy name, and in thy name have cast out devils, and in thy name done many wonderful works? And then will I profess unto them, I never knew you. Depart from me, ye that work iniquity. Let's see here. Let's go to Matthew 24. What is transgression of the law, by the way? Which is the definition of sin. Unless you're a Pauline, and sin is anything not done in faith. So you can cheat on your wife in faith, and you're not breaking the law or transgressing. It's reprehensible. Let's see here, Matthew chapter 24. And the Messiah went out and departed from the temple, and his disciples came to him for to show him the buildings of the temple. And the Messiah said unto them, See ye not all these things? Verily I say unto you, therefore shall not be left here one stone upon another that shall not be thrown down. And as he sat upon the Mount of Olives, the disciples came unto him privately, saying, Tell us, when shall these things be, and what shall be the sign of thy coming, and of the end of the world? And the Messiah answered and said unto them, Take heed that no man deceive you, for many shall come in my name, saying, I am Christ, and shall deceive many. And ye shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that ye not be troubled, for all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines and pestilences, and earthquakes in diverse places. All these are the beginning of sorrows. Then they shall deliver you up to be afflicted, and shall kill you, and ye shall be hated of all nations for my name's sake. And then shall many be offended, and shall betray one another, and shall hate one another. And many false prophets shall rise, and shall deceive many. And because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold. But he that shall endure unto the end, the same shall be saved. And yet Christians say, I was saved on X date when I said the hocus-pocus incantation of Paul. The end is not yet. You are not yet saved. That's to be determined by the Father at the end. Don't declare yourself saved. Let the Father do his work. And this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations, and then shall the end come. Matthew 24:15, when ye therefore shall see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet, stand in the holy place, whosoever readeth, let him understand. Then let them which be in Judea flee into the mountains. Let him which is on the housetop not come down to take anything out of his house. Neither let him which is in the field return back to take his clothes. And woe unto them that are with child, and to them that give suck in those days. But pray ye that your flight be not in the winter, neither on the Sabbath day. For then shall great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world, to this time, no, nor ever shall be. And except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved, but for the elect's sake, those days shall be shortened. Then if any man shall say unto you, lo, here is the Messiah, or there, believe it not. Paul say, here is the Messiah in the sky, there he was. We are commanded, believe it not. For there shall arise false Christs and false prophets, and shall show great signs and wonders, insomuch that if it were possible, they shall deceive the very elect. Behold, I have told you before. In other words, he's saying, I warned you in advance. Wherefore, if they shall say unto you, behold, he is in the desert, go not forth. Behold, he is in the secret chambers, believe it not. I find it interesting that the heart has four secret chambers, and that's where Paul has people inviting people into the secret chambers of their heart through that sinner's prayer, quote unquote. Couldn't see my fingers. Did my little italics in the air. For as the lightning cometh out of the east and shineth even into the west, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. For wheresoever the carcass is, there will the eagles be gathered. Matthew 24:29, immediately after the tribulation of those days, shall the sun be darkened, and the moon shall not give her light, and the stars shall fall from heaven, and the power of the heavens shall be shaken. All right, so Matthew 24 is a long chapter. My voice is getting raspy, and we're nearing the end of the broadcast, so I'm going to stop there. Take another little break for water for myself and everybody that may need to pause for a minute. And see.
Hello, my name is Christy Rose, and I'm the co-host of Mental Acumen here on Freedomizer Radio. I was trained as a health coach at the world's largest nutrition school, the Institute for Integrative Nutrition. I want to support you on your journey to a healthy mind-body connection. I believe the healthcare system is broken, and we need to play an active role in improving our health. We need to take a proactive approach to wellness If you've struggled to lose weight or to maintain your weight, please consider reaching out to me because I was trained to look at people as individuals and to address the whole body and mind at once. Our bodies are more intelligent than our minds, and they try to scream for help in ways such as depression, acne, and fatigue. I can help you using natural holistic methods to get to the root issues and decrease or eliminate symptoms. I offer a free initial health history consultation, so please visit my website for more information or to schedule an appointment at coachchristie.com. That's coachchristie.com. Tune in to the Alaska Patriot Network, Fridays, 2 p.m., Alaska time, 3 p.m. Pacific.
Sometimes as a Christian, it can be really hard to continue to find joy in our daily disciplines, even in biblical word Bible study. Honestly, we know we're supposed to find joy in it and get growth. That's why I named my new show Dynamic Word Bible Studies, because studying the Word shouldn't leave you unchanged. It should provide dynamic growth through your life and the power of God encountered every day. I'm really excited to start this on Wednesdays from 9 to 10:30 right here on Freedomizer Radio. We're going to start out with the Book of Romans, one of the most important books to my early Christian walk. So whether you've been a Christian for a long time or you're just learning about Scripture, this is going to be a great place to learn what it was that Paul was trying to tell the Church of Romans and the things that are important to us still today. Again, join me every Wednesday from 9 to 10:30 right here on Freedomizer Radio for Dynamic Word Bible Studies.
Tune in to the show, The Right View, every Friday from 6 to 9 p.m.
All right, so we are back. We have 14 minutes left in the show, which typically I try to wind it down to where we end it 3 minutes ahead of time. So there's time for 1 minute music and then a 2 minute buffer for the next broadcast, which in fact we do not have a next broadcast. The next hour and a half will be free time. Then after that on Freedomizer Radio, there is Bible study with Carl at 2 Central, 3 o'clock Eastern for an hour and a half. And then there's, I believe, another hour and a half break. And then we have another Freedomizer broadcast, Seeds of Change, I believe it's called. So you can definitely look at the lineup of what is available to investigate it with the mindset that you wish to do so in, at freedomizerradio.live, and it will give you the full lineup. So, once again, in Deuteronomy, these signs and wonders, prophets, are false, not because their prophecies are untrue, rather their signs and wonders are extraordinary. Indeed, their prophecy comes true. Deuteronomy 13:2, the sign or the wonder come to pass, whereof he spake unto thee. Rather, the proof they are false is in the content of their message, as subversive of the Torah, the five books of Moses. These prophets try to draw thee aside out of the way which Jehovah, thy Yahuwah, commanded thee to walk in. Deuteronomy 13:5 and Deuteronomy 4:2. When Deuteronomy was written, all there was of Scripture was Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. So, since we are so short on time, one thing that I would like to quickly do is books written by Paul, New Testament. Okay, some people say, okay, I get it, Paul is a false apostle. What books do I avoid, or what books do I read with new eyes, understanding that he was diverting the people away from the true gospel of the Father in heaven. So let me just pull this up and see if I can find a list for you. I could open up the Bible and read it to you too, but there should be a list. Here's a list of books, and I can identify it from here. So New Testament, Paul wrote Romans, 1 Corinthians, 2 Corinthians, Galatians, Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians, 1 and 2 Thessalonians, 1 Timothy, 2 Timothy, Titus, and Philemon. There's some argument as to whether or not he wrote Hebrews. I do not believe he did. Most people do not believe that he did. If anything, it was written by one of his disciples. It is very Pauline in nature, so know that. Books that I absolutely trust are the book of Matthew, basically all four Gospels, with some exception. There were some things left out and added in Mark, I know, Luke, I know. So Matthew and John are the most trusted of the four Gospels. And James is trusted. Basically, James and Galatians are sparring, or there are the written works resulting from the sparring going on between James and Paul. The Peters, 1st and 2nd Peter, 1st Peter, yes, 2nd Peter, that's a whole discussion in and of itself with a lot of debate. I see 2nd Peter, there's too much discussion to get into on 2nd Peter right now, but 1 John, 2 John, 3 John, and Jude are all very trustworthy. So James, all the Johns, including the Gospel, Jude, and Revelation. So, and Acts, when you look at it from a historical perspective, there's definitely a lot in Acts to be gleaned. It does tell us who Paul is. If you have the eyes of a Christian, you're going to side with Paul. If you have the eyes of one who sides with the Father in heaven and sees what is actually happening, i.e. the things that we referenced earlier, then Acts is a tool. And it's going to, for example, heat on ice will melt the ice and it will heat hardens other substances, you know, scientifically. Tools affect different material differently. So it depends on what your heart is made of, how Acts is actually going to affect you, if that makes sense. So unfortunately, I never got any of my guests or co-hosts to call in today. So I pray that Chris and Brandy are okay. That's very unlike them, and they did say that they were going to be on the broadcast today. But I just want to encourage all my listeners to pursue absolute truth and to be brave in standing in it when you do see it. It's that pearl that you find in the soil and sell all that you have to go and buy that one piece of land so that you can have that one pearl. It's just absolutely incredible. So I wish everybody a wonderful Sunday afternoon. And we will see you here next week. Shalom for now.